in writing this book, you picked out 9 different small towns to visit and research and really try to capture the flavor of those. Mm-hmm. How did you pick those 9 communities?
Well, 2 of them were easy because I picked the place that I lived currently and I picked the place that I went there from. So I considered that sort of Rocky Mountain and Mississippi River parentheses around my life. And so Centennial, Wyoming is actually a little bit outside of where I lived, but it represents the flavor of, you know, where I was in Laramie. So that was easy to write about, or it was a starting point anyway. And then Bellevue, Iowa, where I currently live, I was just very inspired to write about, you know, what it was like to be a newcomer there in a community where literally I knew, other than my husband, I knew nobody and the realtor when we moved there. And so what was that experience like? And because if it was like that for me, what would it be like for others as well?
You picked 2 Kansas towns, mm-hmm. Sedan and
Norton.
Norton. Tell me about each of those.
Sure. Well, Norton is out on the high plains of northwest Kansas, and I picked it because it really has a lot of influences from the west. So it's very near Colorado. It's on the Nebraska border as well. So people ranch out there more often than they do, you know, row crop agriculture. And it's so consequently, they sort of see themselves as western in a way that people in eastern Kansas really don't. So I wanted to see what that community was like from that sort of self-image point of view, but also the influence of the state prison that's there and all the diversity that brings in terms of family members who make trips out there all the time to visit their loved one who's incarcerated and what that influx does and how those 2 big groups of people interact and what they find as common ground and how they define community once they are all in that one pot together.
Well, speaking of the prison there, talk to me about The Haven.
Well, The Haven, I came across that. I just stumbled upon this woman, you know, in the course of reporting. You just find people. And she and her husband do a mission to the prison, teaching Bible studies and so forth. She became aware that when families would come out, they had nowhere really that they could afford to stay, and that didn't help the family unit. It did not help the man who's incarcerated. It didn't help the community. So they found a home that they could purchase for almost nothing. Volunteers worked to renovate it and fill it with these little bedrooms, and now people can come out. They have to make a reservation, but it's free, and they have a room, and they might share it with their, you know, the several kids, and, you know, it's nothing fancy. But it provides a place, a safe place, for the families of inmates to come. And it's just a very loving thing for them to do for really no reward other than doing the right thing for the community. It's just a nice story.
Let's go from Norton down to southeast Kansas. Tell me about Sedan.
I love Sedan. It's just a wonderful, beautiful place. Geographically, landscape-wise, it's just gorgeous. They call it the Little Ozarks. So it's very beautiful. It's got problems in that the thing that made it put it on the map, which was oil and gas, doesn't last forever, and they have found that out. They do have an individual who put quite a bit of personal investment into the town and renovated a bunch of buildings and said, okay, let's see what we can do. You want to start a business, you can be in this place and try to make things happen.
And we should mention that person was Bill Curtis.
That person is Bill Curtis.
Oddly enough, got his radio start at KANU, the flagship station of Kansas Public Radio in Lawrence.
We definitely need to mention that one. He's from Independence, Kansas. So that's what gave him, I think, that impulse to want to do something when he saw Sedan just, you know, kind of crumbling. So he put a lot of personal investment. He also started a ranch, a grass-fed bison ranch. And so his daughter, Mary, came out from San Francisco, and she and her husband moved there. Well, they weren't, it's a funny story. But her partner came out and started, you know, running the gift shop and running the business, and things are thriving. But, you know, you just have to change your definitions of what thriving means. And I think people are learning that.
One of the quotes you have from someone in Sedan is, you can live here if you want, but you'd better know how to do something.
The first thing he said before he said that was, somebody better have a job. Please, somebody have a job. And so what he was referring to is, you know, folks look at, you know, where they're going to live. They look at a community like Sedan where the housing prices are very depressed and think, awesome. You know, I can afford to live there. I can rent a house, rent a trailer, this and that. And that's fine. I'll come down here and be part of our community. But somebody needs to have a job. One of you, if you're a family, somebody, you just can't come here and sit. And that's the same, that ties into what you just read of, you know, you better know how to do something. You either better be able to fix things or make things or sell insurance or, you know, grow your own food. I mean, you've got to know how to do something. And I think the fact that he mentioned that is an indicator that not everybody does know how to do something.
What did studying these nine communities teach you about what it takes for a small town to thrive moving forward?
Everyone is doing the same sort of thing in a lot of ways. You know, everyone is working on economic development. Everyone is trying to, you know, say, come home to wherever programs. You know, honestly, it was a program that the state of Kansas had in place that was one of the earliest inspirations for me, the rural opportunity zones. And I did a story about that for a publication I write for. And I really wanted to know, I mean, does this work? And I had someone in Kansas tell me, well, you know, it's a great idea, but I wanted to meet those people. But it was really hard to meet those people because, as someone told me, top-down programs don't really resonate as much. I mean, if you're already thinking of doing something, then you take advantage of it, but it is not the impulse behind things. So, but everyone is trying something, and it's really just, you know, the chemistry of the right mix of people, but it's also, there've got to be an infrastructure. My community had a progressive city government that viewed internet as a, not just as a utility, but as a necessity. And so we have fiber optic. So consequently, I could go there and do my work as a writer and as a teacher and have it be no different. But my town was set up so that those things were possible. In Sedan, Kansas, you know, the walls between their buildings are such thick stone that they can't have stuff. And the county commissioner weren't real excited about trying to move forward with that because that wasn't where they saw, you know, their future. So it's just a mix of getting lucky, but having the kind of far-sighted, you know, governmental help, people understanding what, you know, rural transportation costs are inside of schools, but people locally deciding that they can run for committees and serve. You've got to be willing to do that, but you've got to have your life organized well enough that that is a possibility for you. I'm coming down to just saying you luck, you know, being in the right place and being able to move forward, you know, recognize when things are going well and be able to move forward in advancing that.
Julianne, can I get you to read an excerpt from your book?
Sure. In spite of amenities or location or planning, sometimes no amount of good intentions can protect a town from people's need to live someplace else. Taken to the extreme, sometimes a town literally dissolves itself and turns its functions over to the county where it resides. So-called disincorporation might happen when the town no longer has the tax revenue for services, for police and fire protection, or for streetlights and snow removal, or when no one is willing to run for council or to be the mayor. Just because a town dissolves its government doesn't mean it cannot carry on, though in an ad hoc way. Yet people who've been through disincorporation report it brings a profound sense of loss, with residents feeling they were poor stewards for the hopes of long-gone town founders who still keep watch from the quiet hilltop cemetery. Like other forms of life, communities have a cycle and transition naturally from hopeful beginning to thriving to struggling to ending their days as vessels for nostalgia and reflection, but also for rebirth. Every day, through acts of stubborn resilience, this region seems poised to reinvent itself, to grow new hope, to teach new lessons. Those lessons might be as simple as finding resilience through thinking locally but acting as a collective, being mindful that even long traditions are not infinite. Taking steps like investment in education, housing, entrepreneurship, infrastructure, and civil public discourse are important everywhere in communities of all sizes, possibly no more than in the rural areas of this region, which by many measures is in deep trouble. But the world has always been full of rooters and rangers, people who plant themselves in one spot permanently, and people who make a sail out of their mobility and let the wind be their guide. It will be a fine thing when this region finds a way to sustain those rooters and tempt some of those rangers to settle here, at least for a time.
That's Julianne Couch reading from her book, Small Town Midwest. Julianne, thank you so much.
Thank you so much. This has been so fun.